These are for you. Lana glanced at the top one. Jeff, her beloved older brother. She couldn't wait to hear his news and if he'd heard from Nick lately. Then her heart leapt. The second letter was from Carl. She wanted to rush upstairs straight away and read it, devour it. Steady, keep calm. She was aware Maxine was watching her. Hair best, I presume, Maxine said with a knowing grin. Yes, Lana stuttered, determined not to let her face go red like some young girl. And one for my brother, she added, trying to take the attention off Carl's. Hair best seems to be keeping up quite a correspondence. Maxine was still smiling. I've told you before, it's only to find out how Peter's getting along. I'm beginning to wonder. Don't make something out of nothing, Lana said, irritated. Her nerves felt on edge these days, but she couldn't put into words the reasons why. Sorry, Lana, you know I'm only teasing. Immediately, Lana felt contrite. I didn't mean to snap at you, she said. It's just that...
Just what?
Maxine raised her eyes to Lana. You're not falling in love with him, are you? Lana's heart did a cartwheel.
No, of course not. Don't be so silly. He would be the last person I'd choose to fall in love with.
We don't always have the choice, Maxine said softly. She looked up.
Lana, are you sure you're all right?
I'm sure, honestly.
You just seem like you've got something on your mind.
No, really.
I know I'm younger than you, Maxine persisted, but I'm a trained nurse, and I know there's something bothering you.
She gave Lana a mock severe look.
Are you getting enough sleep? If not, I can give you something to help.
Yes, Nurse Maxine, I'm sleeping perfectly well. Lana sent her a smile, trying to make light of it. But in truth, Maxine was right. She'd had two or three bad nights lately.
Then go and read your letters in peace.
Lana rose to her feet as Maxine returned her smile. Before either of them could say anything further, there was a knock at the door, and Lana opened it. Peter stood there, a solemn expression on his face.
Hello, Peter. Did you want me or Matron?
Matron? His eyes shifted to Maxine. Is there a letter from my father today? Lana was aware the lad knew as well as the other children that they were not allowed to bother Matron unless there was an emergency.
Come in for a few moments, Maxine told him. Lana, you stay too.
No, I'll leave you to it, Lana answered. She was about to close the door when she heard Peter say,
Is Papa, I mean my father, is he coming at Christmas? He said he would try. He promised.
Lana longed to hear the matron's answer, which was probably why Maxine had invited her to stay while she spoke to Peter. Poor little chap. He was so desperate to see his papa again. She felt a prickling under her eyelids and fled to her room. Once there, she sat on her bed. Her brother's letter first. She had to know he was safe. She read it quickly, thankful Jeff sounded cheerful, and that Nick hoped to get some shore leave very soon. Her mother would be so happy to see one of her boys. Lana swallowed. This terrible war, shattering people's lives, pulling loved ones apart. How much longer? She slit Carl's letter open with trembling fingers. This time she pulled out two sheets of paper. My dear Lana, you cannot know how welcome your letters are, and I hope to tell you good news. You mentioned in your last letter that your nice matron was to see if I might come to the home a day or two over Christmas. She has succeeded. My superior has said yes, and even better news, I might be able to come alone. I believe they have already written to Mrs. Taylor and merely await her confirmation that it would not inconvenience her in any way. Of course, I am longing to see my son, but I am also happy that I will see you, too, if you do not go home for Christmas. Please tell me you will stay at the orphanage. I hope you do not mind that I say such things, but you have been on my mind lately when I am given a short break from work. I am so happy you are doing everything you can for Peter, but I fear you have had a difficult time yourself in this terrible war. There is a deep sadness to your eyes, which I know very well. You will tell me if I am wrong, but I don't think so. Please tell Peter the good news, that I will see him on Christmas Eve. In Germany, it is a more important occasion than Christmas Day. Before the war, it was magical. Now it is a nightmare. But I am here in England, so I am one of the lucky people.
Lana, my dear, I don't know how I should sign this, so I will just say, Carl.
With shaking hands, Lana put the letter back in the envelope, then pulled it out and read it again.
What was Carl trying to say?
He'd made it plain he wanted to see her again. He felt instinctively that she was sad underneath her confident manner, and he'd called her his dear. She didn't know what to make of it, but there was a definite shift in the way he expressed himself in this last letter. What should she do? She'd never hinted she was seeing someone else, as it hadn't seemed necessary. But if he knew she was seeing Frank, she was convinced he would be hurt, even though Frank was only a friend, as she was to him. Who was she fooling? What about that kiss? Frank wasn't being merely friendly then. Her face warmed as she remembered how she'd responded to him for a few seconds. His lips had somehow felt right. But seconds later she'd pulled away as though she was betraying Carl. It was ridiculous. Carl had never voiced anything to her that could possibly be construed as having any serious intent. She was sure any commitment was the last thing Carl would be thinking about. And she couldn't blame him. He was just lonely, that was all. Missing his wife and probably feeling just as guilty that he found another woman attractive. She shook her head to clear the knots she was tying in her mind, and failed. Maxine hadn't said anything about Carl coming. Was that what she wanted to tell Peter? He'd be so thrilled. She would have loved to have been the one to tell him, to bring the gleam of excitement into Peter's bright blue eyes, eyes the exact colour of his father's. Stop thinking like this. But no matter how hard she tried, she couldn't stop a delicious frisson that Carl would soon be here for more than a couple of hours, and that he was looking forward to seeing her. She needed to answer his letter immediately. He'd be pleased to know she wasn't going anywhere else for Christmas. Dear Carl, I've just received your letter with the good news, and I believe Maxine is at this very minute telling Peter, so he will be very happy. I'm here over Christmas, but hope to be going home to see my parents early in the new year, all being well. I am sure your visit here will be easier than meeting in Bletchley. You will have more time to see your son in a more comfortable setting. I look forward to seeing you on Christmas Eve. Are you coming by train? With best wishes, Lana. She read it through, knowing she'd deliberately asked a question at the end so he would be sure to reply. She admitted to herself that she longed for his letters, even though each one churned up her emotions. Deliberately breaking up such a dangerous line of thought, she went to look for an envelope, then folded the letter and slid it in. She'd post it at lunchtime. He'd get it tomorrow, so he'd know she was thinking of him. She pressed her lips together to stop any more of this nonsense and reread Jeff's letter. She caught Reggie as he was pushing his way through the younger children to be first in the dining room for their mid-morning break. Reggie! He turned, a frown immediately forming. Please collect your drink and come to the library. I need to talk to you. All heads turned to Reggie. What about? Reggie's tone was, as usual, challenging. Just do as I ask, Lana said. She picked up her own cup and took it to the library, wondering if he would follow. A couple of minutes later, she heard his heavy footsteps as he opened the library door. We'll go into the small room, she said. Come and sit down. Reggie drank his milk in one go. She thought he was just showing off, so didn't make any comment. Milk's for babies, he said, when he drained the mug noisily and put it back on the table. I'd rather have coffee. Milk is better for you. You're still a growing lad. I'm as tall as any man, Reggie shot back, but I've outgrown these clothes. He stuck a leg forward to show Lana. I look ridiculous. Matron is going to sort that out, Lana said, and get you a larger jacket, and I'm going to show you how to tie your tie properly. What's wrong with it? Reggie's tone had become belligerent.
You haven't started from the beginning. I can tell you just pulled it over your head exactly as you took it off yesterday, already knotted.
Reggie narrowed his eyes but said nothing. I have two brothers, Lana said. I know about these things. She looked directly at him. Might as well plunge straight in, as was her usual way.
Reggie, what do you enjoy here?
Are you talking about lessons? He gave a smirk.
Yes.
Lana ignored the hint of an innuendo.
Nothing, Reggie said triumphantly. I'm not interested in nothing here.
She decided now was not the time to correct his grammar. She waited.
Most kids my age are out working and making money, he went on.
This is what I want to talk about, but it would be nice to know what you might like to do in order to make the money.
I don't care. I just want to earn money and get out of the home, be with kids my own age. I feel trapped here.
But wouldn't it be better if you enjoyed what you were doing to earn the money, instead of being bored stiff and watching the clock all day?
Reggie shrugged.
There must be something you really like, Lana persisted.
Reggie fingered his chin, which showed the first hint of a beard.
Yeah, that is one thing.
She looked at him expectantly.
I've never done nothing like it, but I want to learn to cook. I did ask cook once if I could have a go, but she told me to get out of her kitchen. She was too busy to talk to me.
Would you like me to have a word with her?
Nah, she made it clear she don't want me.
I'm not so sure. If she thought you were serious... Not that I'm advocating you do an apprenticeship with her. Ideally, you need to be away from the home and out in the world. But it might be a good place to start, so you get a little experience, which would hold you in good stead.
She caught his eye. If he wasn't so belligerent all the time, his expression perpetually surly, he didn't have a bad face. His hair was dark and thick, though he wore far too much brill cream. And he had lovely dark brown eyes, although they were narrowed with suspicion at this moment. She made up her mind. I'll have a word with cook.
Do what you like, miss, Reggie said.
He gave her a twisted kind of smile.
I suppose if she said I could help, she'd at least let me have a cup of coffee.
Lana told Maxine about her conversation with Reggie.
I didn't get anywhere when I tried to talk to him once, Maxine said. She gave Lana a rueful smile.
I suppose it takes a teacher to understand the more difficult children. The thing is, Maxine, he's no longer a child, Lana said. He has a lot of anger in him and pent-up energy he needs to release. If he can get really interested in cooking, he could get a job in one of the hotels or restaurants in Liverpool and live in. He's getting to the point where he needs to make his own way, know he has a future outside these walls.
I totally agree, Maxine said. We'll have a word with Bertie. She looked up.
Will you, or shall I?
Maybe best from you, as you've known her a lot longer than me.
I'll talk to her straight away. Maxine paused.
Actually, why don't I ask her if she's free for 10 minutes or so, and have her come to the office while you're here, as you were the one who suggested it? 5 minutes later, Bertie was in the office, looking a little flustered.
Is there something the matter, matron? She said.
No, no, Maxine answered. But Lana has a suggestion to make to you and we wondered how you'd feel about it.
It's about Reggie, Lana started.
What about him? Bertie said, a ready smile disappearing. He's trouble, that one.
It's because he's at a loose end, Lana said. He should be out working by now. He's not interested in his lessons and what he'd really like to do is learn to cook. But when he mentioned it to you once, he said you weren't too happy about it.
Not with his reputation, I wasn't. Bertie said firmly. He's too familiar by far with the maids, always putting his arm round them when he thinks no one's looking, making them giggle and squeal. I'm not having any nonsense like that going on in my kitchen.
What if we tell him you'll give him a chance, but if he gets out of line, cheeks you or interferes in any way with the maids, he won't be given a second chance. He'll be out.
Bertie looked thoughtful. She turned to Lana.
What would you be expecting from him? And from me, for that matter?
Lana hid a smile. I'd want him to start as a trainee. Everything from the bottom job upwards, but not moving up to the next stage until you are completely satisfied. Maybe learn how to prepare breakfast, the porridge and such like, so you have an extra half hour to yourself in the mornings. Help to clean the kitchen after supper.
You're always saying you don't have enough help cooking for all of us, so you might find he turns up to be an asset.
Maybe. Bertie didn't look very convinced. I can see him trying to take over.
If he does, then I give you full permission to deal with him as you wish. But any real problems, you know you can come straight to me, Lana said. It might take him a little while to settle in, so there's sure to be a few sparks at the beginning. But I've a feeling he'll end up making the most of the opportunity, she added. And you're always very calm and in control.
You don't know what I'm like, Hen, when things go haywire, Bertie said. I can lose my temper quick as anyone. I certainly don't need any more sparks flying from the likes of Reggie.
She paused and rose to her feet. Let me think about it over a cup of tea. She suddenly smiled, her usual cheerful smile. That always helps me think straight. Chapter 34. It was 5 days to Christmas Eve, and the children were in a permanent state of excitement. Lana and the teachers had given them various jobs to keep them occupied and calm them down. The older boys would help Charlie to choose the main tree and carry it into the Great Hall, and anyone who volunteered would make the paper chains and table decorations. This year, Maxine decided only children of 8 years and younger would be allowed to decorate the second, smaller tree, and Lana asked Priscilla if she would supervise them. Everyone would have a turn in Barbara's class to make Christmas cards for cook, matron, and the teachers, and if they had a special friend. Lana was concerned that all these preparations would take precedence over the play. The children definitely needed more practice. She decided to have a word with Maxine after breakfast.
Maxine, do you think we can break up a day before so we can spend time on the play? We're still not ready and we need a dress rehearsal so they're used to their costumes on the night.
Yes, of course. I'll tell them at break time there'll be no more classes until the 1st of January. You'll be the most popular teacher here, Maxine laughed.
Can you believe it will be 1944 and still no sign of the war ending, Lana said soberly.
Every time there's a piece of good news, you think it might be coming to an end, but it never is.
She brushed away the thought of Carl still having to work as a prisoner of war, even though the British were apparently pleased to have him on their side. What must it be like for him? She tried to imagine it the other way round, that she was in another country doing her best, yet knowing she wasn't really accepted and longing to get back to where she felt she belonged.
Doesn't seem possible, does it? Maxine agreed. Do you think you'll see Crofton over Christmas?
Maxine shook her head, and her eyes were moist when she looked at Lana.
I've no idea. He hopes so, but there's never any guarantee of anything.
She suddenly smiled.
We're getting maudlin, and it's Christmas, and I'm determined the children are going to have the best Christmas ever.
Did you know Reggie has made the Christmas puddings?
Really? Maxine's eyes were wide. I thought Bertie did them months ago.
No, she couldn't. She said dried fruit was in really short supply, so she's had to leave it more or less until the last minute so she could save enough coupons.
Well, well, Maxine grinned. Seems you might have been instrumental in changing the lad after all.
More Bertie than me, Lana chuckled. I certainly noticed a difference when I put my head in the kitchen door the other day when he was making them. He barely looked up, he was so engrossed. And Bertie was busy, seeming to let him get on with it, though I'm sure she has her usual beady eye open at all times.
What about Ethel and Beth?
They were just getting on with peeling the vegetables and washing up. All was humming.
That's incredible.
Maxine wrote a few lines on her pad.
I shall be sending in my monthly report to Mr. Clark, telling him this latest. I think he'll be as astonished as I am.
She looked up.
By the way, how's Priscilla these days?
We make sure we keep her busy, Lana answered, and I know she's enjoying her part of Nancy in the play. Did you know she has the most beautiful singing voice?
No, I didn't, Maxine said. How wonderful.
The other children actually stop muttering in the background when she starts to sing. I can't wait for you to hear her.
I'm looking forward to it, Maxine said. It will make a lovely change for Christmas Eve.
She caught Lana's eye.
I keep meaning to tell you, Lana, that the powers that be are allowing Carl to come and see us over Christmas.
Yes, I had a note from him telling me.
Lana somehow managed to keep her voice steady.
They must really trust him, Maxine remarked.
I think they must.
Lana quickly made an excuse to leave Maxine's office. She thought she might give herself away if she stayed a moment longer.
Bingham Hall was buzzing with children's chatter and giggles as they decorated the two trees or sat at tables making paper chains, handing the streamers one by one to Lana and Athena, who were balancing on ladders to decorate the ceilings. Meanwhile, Barbara was busy with last-minute touches to the props and costumes for the play. The dress rehearsal, on the 23rd, the day before they were to perform, was another disaster. Even some of the girls forgot their lines, too busy admiring their own and each other's costumes and giggling. The boys, who'd finally been improving, had dropped right back, and Lana and Athena were beside themselves, trying to instill in them how important it was not to muck about, but to concentrate. Lana banged loudly on the small table where she and Athena, joined by Barbara at the last minute, were watching. Priscilla and Pamela jumped.
"We're on the stage tomorrow evening. Christmas Eve," Lana said when they finally fell silent. "Some of you are consistently good, and I want to say a very big thank you, but others have slipped backwards. This is the last chance we'll get to make this right. So I want to run it one more time and concentrate, all of you. Some of you were leaving it too long between one child's lines and your own, so then I think you've forgotten to come in."
There was some muttering and Lana clapped her hands.
"No more talking," she said, "unless you have any questions."
Her eyes swept round the group.
"Anyone?"
"Please, miss, I want to go to the lav."
"Betsy, you must remember tomorrow night, and all of you, that you go to the lavatory half an hour before the performance. You can't suddenly break off in the middle of the play, or the audience will think you're a proper baby. And I know you're not," she added hurriedly, when she saw Betsy's mouth turn down at the corners.
She looked at her watch. "Let's have a break for 10 minutes, and then be back here promptly." The second run-through was better, but Alan and Bobby were still muddling their lines, and Doris and Daisy got the giggles at a poignant moment when Peter had to ask for more porridge. Lana sighed. They were tired. She must remember they were only children with difficult backgrounds. None of them was going home to a warm and loving family, no matter how hard Maxine and the others tried to give them affection. It wasn't the same as having a loving mother and father as she herself had. She must always remember how lucky she was and not be hard on the children.
"Much, much better," she smiled, after she and Athena and Barbara had finished clapping.
Most of the children grinned back.
"Thank you, everyone. Cook has cocoa for you as a special treat in the kitchen. Change out of your costumes and then run along and we'll see you tomorrow. Be here in your costumes at 4 o'clock. If anyone needs help, the three of us will be close by."
Later that evening in bed, Lana admitted she'd wanted to impress Carl at the play she and Athena had written and show him how they'd coached his son as the star of the show. She felt a flicker of shame that she'd been mostly upset for her own sake, her own vanity, which was making the children fractious. What did it really matter if they weren't word perfect? But she couldn't help thinking that Peter wouldn't let her down. But as she snuggled under the covers, she admitted something else. It wasn't just Peter she was thinking of. Lana slept fitfully. Every time she awoke, only another hour had passed. Her mind buzzed. What time would he arrive? He knew the play was starting at 5 o'clock. Maybe he'd be here for dinner. If so, where would Maxine seat him? Telling herself not to be such a fool, she closed her eyes again, willing sleep. Then Frank popped into her head. She'd not meant to say anything to him about the play when they last met, but somehow it had slipped out.
"It sounds wonderful," he'd said. "Do you think your matron will allow me to come and watch it?"
How mean she'd felt when she'd quickly replied that it wouldn't be allowed. It was only for the inhabitants of Bingham Hall.
He'd looked so hurt she'd felt a stab of guilt. Still did. When the hands on her bedside clock showed 5:25, Lana gave up. It was Christmas Eve, after all. Throwing back the bed covers, she rushed to the mottled mirror over the wash basin. Yes, just as she thought. Her eyes, feeling full of grit, were pink. What a picture she would present. Heart sinking, she ran her hands through her wavy red hair. To her critical eyes, it appeared lank and dull. She sighed and went downstairs. After breakfast, as the children were spilling out of the dining room, Priscilla came up to her.
Miss Ashwin, I wanted to ask you something. Did you invite Mr. Drummond to our play this afternoon?
Lana was so taken aback she could hardly look at Priscilla's upturned, anxious face. I don't think he'd be interested, she said.
Oh, he would. I know he would, Priscilla persisted. And he'd like to see Rupert, and Rupert would be pleased to see him.
Maybe not, Lana said, desperate to put the child off. Rupert might very well think Mr. Drummond had come to take him back to the clinic.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Priscilla fiddled with one of her plaits.
It would have been nice to see him, that's all.
She gave Lana a sly look.
Besides, I think he likes you. In fact, more than likes you, she added,
tossing the pigtail back in position and sending Lana a mischievous grin. He's a very nice man and I like him too, but don't start any matchmaking, Priscilla, Lana said in a firm voice, though her heart was thumping uncomfortably. Who else thought the same? Was there no privacy to be had at Bingham Hall? No more of that nonsense, do you hear?
If you say so, Miss Ashwin, Priscilla said, looking contrite.
But Lana could tell the child didn't believe a word. Then something struck her. She'd never seen the usually solemn girl give such a wicked-looking grin. Lana couldn't help smiling. If Priscilla thought that Frank more than liked her and even teased her about it, then Lana wasn't going to argue. Priscilla was behaving much more like a normal girl of her age, and that was a miracle. Later that day, she came across Priscilla in the playroom reading when she was meant to be keeping an eye on the younger ones.
What are you reading, Priscilla?
Priscilla snapped the book shut.
Nothing, she mumbled, her face flushed. Just something one of the maids left lying around.
Lana stretched out her hand and Priscilla wordlessly gave it to her. The paper jacket showed a painted picture of a woman with long blonde hair in a fashionable roll at the front, and a man's dark head behind her. The heart remembers.
Oh, the library has the books written by people who've been dead hundreds of years, Priscilla said defensively.
Priscilla was growing up, Lana mused, and needed to be treated less like one of the children. She'd take her to the library in Liverpool next time she went in. Lana had asked Maxine if they could lay the tables up for dinner first thing in the morning, so the Christmas table decorations would make a festive splash throughout the day.
Good idea, Maxine said. It's never too soon to start Christmas.
She looked at Lana with a glint in her eye. And if Herr Best arrives early, I'm sure he'd appreciate the trouble you've gone to. She gave Lana a saucy wink.
Maxine, stop it.
Lana gave the young matron a mock glare.
It's bad enough with Priscilla trying to match me with Frank Drummond.
Oh,
do tell.
Maxine's smile was wide.
Nothing really. She wanted to know if we'd invited him. I told her we hadn't, and she was disappointed. Then she said, I think he likes you. Then added, more than likes you.
It must be a good feeling to be so much in demand, Maxine grinned.
Seriously, we should have invited Frank. He's such a nice chap. And he'd probably like to have seen if Rupert was settled in.
That was Priscilla's argument. Oh, what had she started? She'd now have to explain to Maxine that it would be a bad idea with Carl in the audience. But why should it be? He was a father wanting to see his son in a play. Nothing unusual about that. But she knew in her heart he was also coming to see her. The front doorbell rang, and Lana's pulse began to race. It was him. How wonderful he was early. He must have started out at dawn. It rang again.
"Doesn't sound as though anyone's around," she said, her voice shaking. "I'd better answer it." She sprang to her feet and hurried to the great hall. Heaving the door open, she was about to greet him when the smile of welcome died on her lips.
"May I come in?"
For a few seconds, Lana couldn't think who the woman was.
"Celia Daniels, the midwife, if you remember."
"Oh, of course." Somehow Lana remembered her manners. "Do come in." A flood of disappointment enveloped her as she held the door wide. Celia Daniels stepped, or rather tottered, into the great hall on high heels, not the most practical in the heavy rain. She shook out her umbrella, and Lana pointed to the umbrella stand.
"Have you come to see Matron?" Lana asked.
"You and Matron?" Celia Daniels said unexpectedly.
"Do take a seat," Lana said, "and I'll see if she's free."
Lana put her head in the door of Maxine's office. "Maxine, it's Celia Daniels, you know, the midwife who came when the twins were left here." Maxine rolled her eyes.
"What on earth does she want? She'd like to see both of us for a few minutes."
Celia Daniels was impatiently tapping her stiletto on the stone slab floor. She looked up with raised eyebrow as Lana approached her.
"Yes, Matron can see you. Would you like to follow me?"
"Do you take that wet raincoat off, Mrs. Daniels?" Maxine said as they entered the office.
"Celia, please," the midwife said, a false note sounding in her apparent friendly request.
She removed her coat and handed it to Lana without even looking at her.
"I expect you're wondering why I'm here," she said, "but I thought I should update you on the twins."
Without waiting for their reply, she went on. They were obviously taken care of in the baby's ward, but it was touch and go for a few weeks. They were so tiny. Premature, of course, but they can do so much more these days for prem babies. And I'm pleased to tell you that they have now put on a little weight and are out of the incubators.
"That's marvellous news," Lana said, watching her friend.
Maxine had suddenly gone quiet.
"It was very kind of you to come and tell us."
Celia gave an imperious nod.
"They should be ready for adoption in another month or two," she said. "Let's hope someone will take them both. It would be a pity to split them up."
Lana stole a glance at Maxine, whose eyes were brimming with tears.
"Well, thank you again for letting us know," Lana said. "We appreciate your trouble."
"Oh, that's not the only reason I'm here," Celia interrupted, then opened her handbag and took out a silver cigarette case. She flipped open the lid.
"Cigarette, anyone?"
She waved the case vaguely in the air. Lana shook her head, but Maxine spoke firmly.
"I'm sorry, Celia, but I don't allow smoking in my office, only in the common room."
"Well, we can go to the common room."
"I'm afraid not. The room is reserved for the staff only."
"Actually, I wanted to speak to Lana, in private."
Maxine's eyes widened, but she immediately rose to her feet.
"I've plenty to get on with, so you can talk here in my office." She disappeared.
Why did the woman want to talk to her in private? Lana wondered. It didn't make any sense.
She gave her a surreptitious glance. There was no way on earth she would ever have guessed Celia Daniels was a midwife if she hadn't seen her in action a few weeks ago. Today, she was wearing a very smart frock, and her hair and makeup made her look more like a mannequin than someone in the nursing profession. She wondered if Maxine thought the same.
Then Lana's curiosity waned, and she wanted to get this conversation over with and see the woman out of the door before Carl arrived. She swiveled her chair round so she had a better view of Celia.
"What did you want to talk about?" she prompted.
"Actually, it's about Frank."
Lana gave a start of surprise.
"Frank Drummond, the vet," she said, feeling her neck grow warm, knowing full well who Celia was referring to.
"The very one?"
Celia crossed her legs and gave Lana a pointed look.
"I gather you've been seeing him?"
"Excuse me, but..."
"Oh, no, don't start that about it being none of my business."
Celia folded her arms in front of her. "He's told me about this play or whatever nonsense you're doing this afternoon."
"I wouldn't call it nonsense," Lana said defensively. Thanking her stars, she was keeping very calm.
"Why on
earth was the woman talking about the play? The children are enjoying it immensely, and that's what counts, I would have thought. He seems quite put out not to have been invited. I can't understand why, mind you. The play isn't for the general public, Lana said, now seething. It's for the children's own entertainment, and the staff or any parents to attend. I thought they were orphans here. No, Lana corrected her, not completely. We still have a couple of evacuees, and we have a child with a father in the military. She brushed Carl's image away. I'm sorry, but I still don't understand why you're here talking to me about Frank. If he's upset with me, he can tell me himself. He doesn't need anyone to stick up for him. Oh, but he does, Celia said, looking at Lana directly in the eye. He wouldn't dream of saying anything to you about how hurt he was, but he did to me. He knows he can tell me anything. I've always been a good friend to him, and it is my business how Frank is treated. I don't want to have him upset at all by anyone. You see, I love him, and I believe he loves me, even though he probably doesn't know it yet, and believes he has feelings for someone else. You. Lana swallowed in astonishment. Celia's name had never come up in any of their conversations. She stared back at Celia, whose unusual dark eyes burned into hers. You've come all this way for nothing, Lana said, getting up. Although it was good to know the babies are doing well, but I realise now that it was just an excuse to tell me to lay off Frank. She drew in a sharp breath. But I believe, at 31, I'm old enough to choose my own friends, and yes, even to choose whom I fall in love with, without asking anybody's permission. And I also believe Frank is old enough to fend for himself. She held Celia's surprised gaze. I'll see you out, Mrs. Daniels. As soon as Lana closed the door on Celia Daniels, she breathed out a long sigh. She could feel herself getting hot with the temper she'd fought to control, rising again. Who did Celia Daniels think she was, to come here and tell her who and whom not to like? But was there a tiny grain of truth in Celia's words? Lana asked herself when she went upstairs to her room to clean her teeth. If she was absolutely honest, she deliberately hadn't invited Frank to the play, because there'd been a possibility that Carl might be able to come. She wasn't in love with Frank, no, but she enjoyed his company very much. Their banter together always lightened her mood when things got difficult at the home with one or more of the children, and she always felt perfectly at ease with him. A feeling she had to admit she didn't often have with Carl. Enigmatic was the word she'd used to describe him. And his face, his beautifully cut features, the startling blue eyes full of expression and love when his attention was on his son, that was what entranced her. But Frank was completely different. He was a wonderful friend. So why hadn't she been candid with Celia? Told her point blank she wasn't in love with the vet. It was her whole attitude, Lana muttered crossly, as though she had a right to tell me to back off. If Frank's unhappy with our arrangement, he can jolly well tell me himself. With the mean thought that she hadn't assured Celia she wasn't in love with Frank because she privately thought he deserved better, Lana hurried down the stairs. Chapter 35 Lana didn't get a chance to tell Maxime what had transpired between her and Celia Daniels because the matron was endeavouring to do the last-minute touches to make the library ready for the play. Lana looked at her watch. If Carl didn't come soon, he'd be in danger of missing the play. The children were to congregate half an hour before it began, so Barbara and Maxine could check the outfits, and Athena could take her position as prompt in case anyone forgot their lines. When the doorbell finally went, it made Lana jump. She wanted to answer the door herself, but Ethel beat her to it. "Carl Best," she heard him say, in his distinctive voice, making her heart miss a beat. "I believe I am expected." "Do come in, Mr. Best. I'll let Matron know you're here." "She's arranged your room on the fourth floor," Ethel said in a nervous but curious tone. "Charlie will help with your luggage."
Oh, no, I can manage very well, she heard Carl say.
Lana stepped into the hall, and immediately Carl broke into a smile.
Ah, Miss Ashwin, he said, coming forward. I hope I'm not late.
You're exactly on time, Lana returned his smile, wishing with all her heart that Ethel would disappear, that no children's feet would come pounding down the stairs.
Shall I show you your room, Mr. Best? Ethel offered.
That's all right, Ethel, Lana said swiftly. I'll show Mr. Best.
As you wish, miss.
Ethel gave a bob of her head as she made towards the kitchen to giggle with one of the maids, no doubt, Lana thought crossly.
Was it a difficult journey?
Lana asked, desperate to sound normal, even though her heart was banging against her ribcage.
Not so bad, Carl said, as they walked up the staircase. A couple of stops unaccounted for.
Have you eaten?
Yes, thank you, he said, but I would enjoy an English cup of tea.
He smiled at her, and she thought her heart would melt.
I'll see you have one as soon as you're settled, she smiled back.
And how is my son?
You'll see him in about 3/4 of an hour. I hope you will be surprised at how he's changed.
We hope for the better, Carl said seriously.
Oh, yes, it's definitely for the better.
She had to turn away from the intensity of his gaze. She could feel herself making aimless conversation the nearer they got to his room. They were on the last flight to the 4th floor. Maxine said he was to have June's old bedroom, and Lana hadn't seen it, though she could well imagine it would be a little old-fashioned. This was the room Carl was to have for the next 2 nights. Lana's pulse raced as she turned the handle. It was locked. She'd forgotten to ask Ethel for the key. He'd think she was stupid.
I don't have the key, she said, turning towards him. She was close. She could smell the scent on him, a clean smell but slightly musky. It made her senses reel.
He looked down at her, his expression serious. I will wait for you, he said. With flushing cheeks, she ran down the stairs. She was a little breathless by the time she hurried back up the 4 flights. Her heart almost stopped to see Carl on the top landing. It was like a mirage. Telling herself not to be so stupid, she pulled her stomach in tightly to steady her nerves, and brushing past him, she turned the key. With relief, she noticed the room was neat and clean. Someone had put a couple of apples and a few walnuts with a nutcracker and even an orange in a glass bowl on a crisp white runner on top of the chest of drawers. Beside it stood a jug of water, complete with a little beaded crocheted cover. She glanced at the wash basin, which was also spotless, though it had a slight crack. But at least the housemaid had taken some trouble for their guest.
"Do you think you'll be comfortable?" she said as he followed her in and set his bag down.
"Quite comfortable. Thank you, Lana."
He made her name sound special, and she swallowed.
"The play will be starting very soon," she said. "You'll just have time for a cup of tea before you take your seat."
"Will I be allowed to sit next to you?"
I'm not sure. I think Maxine and Athena are arranging the seats.
"We will hope so," Carl said. He seemed to hesitate. Then he stepped forward and held both her arms. "Lana, I'm so pleased to see you. To be here. I am longing to see my son, but I am so happy you will be here."
"I'm glad too," she said, smiling at him, feeling shaky as he gently pressed his fingers on her arms.
She bent his head down, and for a mad moment she thought he would kiss her. She didn't know what to do. She wanted him to kiss her more than anything, but it wasn't right. He'd only found out about his wife a few months ago, and he was a prisoner of war. Besides, Peter needed him.
And he was German. No matter whose side he was on, nothing could alter that fact. These jumbled thoughts flew round her head, throwing her into confusion.
She felt his breath on her face.
"Lana,
I think we should go downstairs," she said, averting her gaze.
If she stood there one moment longer, she would fold herself in his arms, hold him to her, feel the warmth of him. She felt the heat rush through her. If he had an inkling as to what she was thinking. She saw the disappointment in his eyes, but only for a fleeting moment. Then he smiled and released her gently. "You are right. We must go." Even by the time they'd reached the great hall, she could still feel the imprint of his fingers through her blouse to her skin.
"I'll go and organise that cup of tea," she said, unable to hide the tremor from her voice.
Without giving him time to answer, she rushed to the kitchen. Only Reggie was present, stirring something on the stove.
"Reggie, we have a visitor. Would you mind doing tea for the two of us?"
"I wouldn't do it for anyone else, Miss Ashwin," Reggie turned and grinned. "But as it's you..."
"Thank you, Reggie," Lana said firmly.
"Oh, Reggie, make that 3 cups, Maxine said, coming into the kitchen. "In fact, 4. Miss Graham's probably dying for one as well." She looked at Lana and grinned. "I see our handsome hair best has arrived. Why have you left him on his own in the hall?" "Only until I give him a cup of tea," Lana said a little defensively, then saw the twinkle in Maxine's eyes. It was all going to be all right, she was sure. Maxine turned to Reggie. "Can you bring the tray into the library, Reggie? We've just got a quarter of an hour before the play starts."
The boy nodded. "You go on, matron. I'll bring everything."
Lana was glad Maxine was with her when they stepped into the hall. Carl immediately stood up and Maxine extended her hand. "It's very nice to see you again, Mr. Best," she said. "Why don't we all go in?" "I've put you both on the front row," Maxine told Carl, "so Peter can see you. Athena and I will sit on the side to make sure everyone is where they're supposed to be and prompt anyone who forgets their lines." Lana took her seat beside Carl, hoping Peter wouldn't get so excited to see his father that it would put him off. She hugged herself. He'd be fine. She was sure of it. As though Carl was aware of her thoughts, he lightly touched her hand and smiled. "It is like going to the theatre," he said. "Even better," Lana returned, "with your son in the starring role." He pressed her hand. Maxine came to stand in front of the audience of children, almost all the staff, and a handful of adults Lana didn't recognise. "I'd like to give a warm welcome to our visitors today," Maxine said, dropping her eyes to the front row and smiling at Carl. "We do hope you enjoy the play with music, which Miss Ashwin and Miss Graham have written especially for the children. You'll recognise where it's taken from, but this version is..." She paused. "Well, you'll soon see. But please keep in mind that this is their very first performance, though we hope it won't be their last." The children who were not in the play clapped, and Carl joined in, turning to Lana with a smile. She felt almost too overwhelmed to react, but managed to give a few feeble claps. Peter was the first one to appear. He wasn't dressed any differently from usual, though Athena had dirtied his face and knees and ruffled up his usually beautifully groomed little chestnut-brown head. His face nearly split in two when he spotted his father. Carl held up a cautionary hand, and Peter nodded, waiting for the other children to join him. Lana, with the help of Priscilla, had written the words of most of the songs, and Athena had set them to music. When the children were all grouped around Peter, who held out a bowl, they began to sing, "Please, sir, he wants some more. Oliver wants some more. He'd ask he himself, but he's much too shy, for he knows you'll be cross, which will make us cry. Please, sir, give Oliver some more." Lana sat quite entranced. The children were all playing their parts beautifully. Betsy did a solo dance with a couple of cartwheels to end her performance, and the audience clapped her loudly. The child gave them a big grin and a hurried bow, and practically bounced off the stage. Lana straightened up in her seat when an adult-sized person appeared. Where was Alan? He was supposed to have taken over as Fagin when Reggie had acted up that time. But here was Reggie, large as life, grinning from ear to ear, dressed in a long, shabby coat and a pointed hat like a witch's, opening his mouth to sing his special song to the children to keep them under his roof so he could live off them. She couldn't help smiling as Reggie caught her eye.
Then he went into full singing mode and danced with the children, telling them they had to stay with him, as he would always see they had food on the table, so long as they brought him a steady supply of stolen goods.
When had he managed to rehearse all this?
Peter looked as though he was enjoying himself interacting with the others, so different from usual. She stole a sideways glance at Carl. His attention was fixed on the play, on his son. It was so good to see. It was what Peter desperately needed, his father's love and attention. She had to be careful not to allow her feelings to show where Carl was concerned. Peter needed him so much more. She blinked back the tears, and Carl touched her hand for the briefest of moments. She took in a shaky breath and allowed herself to become immersed in the play again. Now Priscilla came to the front of the chalk line, which Lana had drawn to mark the edge of the stage. As Nancy, in the play, Priscilla was looking quite grown up, with her hair loose and wearing a full skirt Maxine had cut down from a donated one. She stood calmly waiting for her introduction. Nancy began her song of lost love, sung with such power and emotion in her crystal-clear voice that Lana felt goose pimples crawl up her arms and her eyes fill. Priscilla had endured such sadness in her young life, and here she was pouring everything into the song. When Nancy's final note died, the children jumped up, clapping and shouting Priscilla's name. Lana couldn't help noticing how the play had brought out the very best in the young girl, giving her confidence and showing off her angelic voice. As Priscilla stood on the makeshift stage, keeping in character with her eyes downcast, Lana glowed with pride. Then she grinned. The one who had truly broken through Priscilla's shell had just strolled into the library. He padded softly to the front row where, to the amusement of everyone, including the children performing, he jumped straight onto Lana's lap. Carl turned to give her a startled look and frowned, which made Lana want to giggle. Rupert began to purr loudly, digging his claws up and down before he settled, and Lana bit her tongue to stop herself from laughing. Carl obviously didn't approve of Rupert's interruption. It flashed across her mind that Frank would have roared with laughter. There was another 10 minutes where the children pretended to steal from Alan, who was dressed in long trousers and a man's jacket like a man on the street, and Charlie, who played an old man who had no idea what was happening, when the twins, Doris and Daisy, delved into his pockets and brought out an old scarf and a bag of coins. Cheers and clapping rang in Lana's ears as Rupert jumped from her lap and she and Carl stood to leave. A flying figure ran towards them. "Papa!" Peter said, for a split second giving his father a hug, then drawing back and extending his hand for a handshake instead. "I'm so happy you came. Did you like the play?"
"I loved it," Carl said, smiling. "And you've become taller since last time I saw you. A real young man."
Peter's face broke into a grin.
"Rupert enjoyed it too," he said. "Did you see him, Papa?"
Carl nodded, his smile fading a little.
"Papa, Matron said you can come and have tea in the dining room with all of us at the end of the play."
He got hold of his father's arm.
"Come with me, Papa, and I'll show you where it is."
With only the briefest apologetic backwards glance to Lana, Carl allowed himself to be led away. "Which is how it should be," Lana told herself briskly. She sniffed and opened her bag for a handkerchief when Priscilla came to her side.
"Miss Ashwin," she said, "are you quite well?"
"Yes, I am," Lana said, smiling at the child. "I'm hoping I haven't got a cold coming." She put her arm round Priscilla. "I just want to tell you how proud I am of you, love. You have a wonderful voice, and the audience gave you a standing ovation."
"They did, didn't they?"
Priscilla's eyes were shining with excitement.
"They did."
Lana looked at her fondly. "Should we go to the dining room and have a cup of tea and a slice of cook's fruit cake?"
"A perfect end to a nearly perfect day," Priscilla said.
Lana knew exactly what Priscilla meant.
Maxine had told all the younger children they had to have a nap in the afternoon, as they would be allowed to stay up later than usual. Peter grumbled he was too old to go to bed like a baby, but he went off obediently with the others.
"You'll be here when I get up?" he asked his father, anxiety coating the words.
"Yes, Peter, your papa will be here. I'm here for 2 days."
"All older kids not going for a nap can come with me to the art room," Barbara announced, as she and Lana were in the great hall. She glanced at Lana and grinned.
"You can leave them with me, Lana," she said, "so you can entertain our guest." She sent Lana a huge wink.
Lana nodded, as though it were the most natural thing in the world to be given the freedom to entertain a German prisoner of war. Her nerves were beginning to get the better of her. In the old days, she had always enjoyed Dickie's teasing, but nowadays she seemed to become embarrassed at the slightest provocation. What on earth was the matter with her? She was behaving like a 17-year-old. She waited while the children followed Barbara, their shouts and giggles fading as they went up the staircase and into the studio. She turned to Carl. The safest thing would be to go for a walk. She needed some fresh air anyway to cool her cheeks.
"May we walk outside?" Carl said.
It was so strange how he often seemed to know what she was thinking.
"I have the same idea," she said, smiling. "I'll fetch my coat."
Carl was standing by the oak door when Lana came down the stairs. Her heart turned over at the image. To think he was waiting for her.
"Shall I open the door?"
Lana nodded, wanting to slip through before anyone else spotted them and made a comment. Outside, the cold made her gasp, and Lana pulled her hat down a little, trying to cover the tips of her ears. They walked a couple of feet apart, but she could feel the vigour of him so strongly. Her shoulder might have been touching his. As though he knew, he glanced at her.
"Are you warm enough?"
"I have been warmer," she said, smiling, the cold wind biting her cheeks. They were walking down the drive, through the avenue of lime trees, bereft now of their leaves. She tripped over a root and would have fallen if he hadn't shot out his arm to steady her. A quiver ran along her spine, and she wondered if he thought she'd tripped on purpose. She wanted to tell him she would never play silly little games like that, but she didn't say anything because it would give it more attention than it deserved. They came to the road in silence. His hand was still under her elbow. It felt strange, cupped in his hand. How she longed to simply put her hand in his. Before she could think what she was doing, she stepped off the main drive and into the light woodland at one side, then stopped. Carl stopped abruptly with her, and with one movement had pulled her into his arms. His lips found hers, gently at first, then he was holding her tight to his chest, his mouth firm now, pressing deeper. She felt the tip of his tongue and moaned, "Lana, oh my darling, I want you so."
"I want you too."
She could hardly speak. She was a woman who had fought against loving this man, but now it was too late. He'd kissed her, and she wanted more of his kisses.